You care about helping others learn and grow, and now you can make an even greater difference. The Ohio State University's fully online master's in applied behavior analysis prepares you to help learners with disabilities thrive. You'll develop the skills to use evidence-based interventions that enhance learning outcomes and foster independence, all in a flexible format designed for working professionals. With growing demand for board-certified behavior analysts, this online program helps you prepare for what's next without pausing your life. If you're ready to expand your impact, Ohio State is ready to support your next step. Visit go.osu.edu/behavioranalysis.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm a sleep-deprived John Hodge, joined by Jumbo Sleepy Cheese Abbott. How you doing?
I am also exhausted. Combine is one of the best weekends of the year for me, but it's also one of the longest weekends of the year. You're burning the midnight oil every single night. You're up early the next morning. You're having a few soda pops with some friends and colleagues, and it's an enjoyable time, but it does take about a week to recover from it.
Yeah, Combine is good for a good time, not a long time, as I think they said back in the 70s during the rock and roll heyday. And that's very much what it's like. It's constant conversation. It's constant fun, constant socialization, and we love it. So a big thank you to all the staff members, volunteers, personnel people, coaches, and of course prospects who we worked with over the last several days in Edmonton. It was a great event. We're going to talk about the format briefly here. We're going to talk about possible changes to the format and some thoughts towards the end of today's show. But we, of course, are going to make the prospects first and foremost the priority here as they enter the 2026 CFL draft, just under a month away, scheduled for Tuesday, April 28th. And we do have a ton of exciting content coming from Combine still, some written stuff about the prospects. I did a full sit-down interview with Edmonton Elks president and CEO Chris Morris. We talked to some coaches, some of which were done via video conference before Combine, some of which were done in person at Combine. So there's a ton of content still to come, written, video, audio, all that stuff. But JC and I wanted to do a full breakdown of everything we saw. We're going to talk about the risers from the Combine, the fallers of the Combine, our assessments, and also, of course, share the assessments that we've heard from the players themselves or from people who were there watching as scouts, participating in the event, all that great stuff. So it's going to be a great show. JC, overall, how would you say the players performed at the 2026 Combine in Edmonton?
I thought it was an impressive class. And I knew that going in, but I came away liking a lot of players that I knew I liked and falling in love with a few players that I didn't expect to. There were very few guys that hurt themselves dramatically in my eyes. And a lot of those players that did maybe not have as good of a weekend have some pretty strong tape to fall back on. So the depth in this draft class, particularly at a couple of positions that we'll talk about here in a second, it's truly remarkable. It needs to be stated that also, 10, 12 guys that are considered at the very top of this draft class weren't in attendance because of NFL pro days or they attended the NFL combine. They have potential opportunities south of the border. So overall, I think this is going to be a draft class that can help teams that need Canadian talent. There's going to be good players available in the later rounds that will be able to contribute early on special teams and potentially develop into starters. And there's not going to be a lot of situations where GMs are sitting there on draft day going, I don't really like any of the options available to me. I think there is good players all the way down through round 8.
Yeah, that was a theme for sure. Is some drafts maybe don't have the top end talent you want, but there's great depth guys who are going to play 6, 8, 10 years in the league as special teamers, as backups, as those glue guys. Some drafts are the opposite. It's like, man, it's great talent at the top, but it's super top heavy, and I don't even know who we're picking in round seven, mm-hmm. round eight. And this year, it seems like we got the Hannah Montana best of both worlds. We really do. This is a great draft class. We have a ton of NCAA talent, but the U Sports guys, I think, showed up really well. And JC, we're going to go position by position here, just like we did in our combine preview, starting with the Justin Dunk quarterback section. That's right. I've named the quarterback section in honor of our fearless leader, Mr. Dunk. And we had one riser and one faller from this group. JC, who were those two?
Well, the riser of the quarterback group is Aloha La Tendresse Regimbold from the University of McGill. We talked about him going into this combine as somebody who a lot of scouts saw as not a quarterback, a guy that they would like to convert to receiver. And there were questions as to whether that would be something he was open to. That's a question that a lot of quarterbacks have to answer as they go through this combine process, is if you're asked to make that switch, are you willing to do it? And Aloha spoke to me on Thursday and said, absolutely. I'm open to playing receiver. I'm open to playing defensive back. I'll play fullback if you want. I'll play special teams. I want to make a CFL roster. And he performed like a guy who was willing to do everything during the on-field practices. He was the best quarterback in attendance in my mind in terms of his ability to throw the ball. His velocity, his accuracy, his decision-making, I thought was a touch above the other players in attendance. But he was winning reps as a receiver out there, catching touchdowns on deep corner routes, putting DBs in a blender when he was asked to. It's still raw, don't get me wrong, but when you compare him to a guy like Jackson Chachinski a year ago who made the same transition and I thought struggled at times with it, Aloha looked entirely natural playing receiver. And he also had some nice reps in the special teams drills as well. To me, he's gone from a flyer, a what if, a potential UDFA guy to convert to somebody I'd be comfortable taking in the mid rounds and could very well draw comparisons to Brad Sinopoli, who is another guy who was a uber athletic quarterback at the University of Ottawa and converted to receiver, but didn't necessarily have the same game-breaking athleticism that La Tendresse Regimbold does. He could be a really special prospect. And unfortunately, the guy who fell in my mind or cemented himself as not a true prospect is the quarterback that you talked to, Hodge, which is Christian Veyer of Georgia State. The accuracy just was not there. And I think you saw throughout the weekend the reasons why he was so frequently benched during his NCAA career.
Yeah, I was really impressed with my conversation with Veyer. And yes, that is how he says his name. That video is up on our YouTube channel. It's in the podcast feed as an audio interview. And I've written a full article based on his collegiate tenure, starting at Penn State, going down to Pittsburgh, and then going down to Georgia State to finish off 2024 and 2025. Look, I think between Aloha La Tendresse Regimbold, I'm not going to do the gratuitous French pronunciation, sorry, JC, and Veyer, and also Josh Jansen, you know, I thought there was some decent quarterback play at the combine, but my anticipation was that we were going to see Veyer head and shoulders above the other two throwing the football. And that was not the case. I agree that La Tendresse Regimbold was the best passer. And that was a surprise to me, right? La Tendresse Regimbold was a 51% completion rate guy in U Sports. He also averaged almost 100 rushing yards a game. I'm going to come back to his athleticism in just a second. But Veyer did not look polished. He looked inaccurate. He was a 54% completion passer over the course of his five-year collegiate career. And when you're throwing, you know, Skelly drill, you're throwing one-on-ones, I would anticipate that the completion percentage is higher than it would be in live game action. And I genuinely don't think it was. Yes, there were some drops that I saw, particularly on day two, as some of the prospects were dragging their butts maybe a little bit on Sunday morning. Again, we'll talk about the format at the end of the show. But I was anticipating that he was going to look polished. And maybe that's on me, because sometimes I think scouts can have a little bit of a bias towards the NCAA guys. And maybe I felt that as well. I felt, okay, this guy's going to come. This guy threw three touchdowns as a true freshman at Penn State. This guy got his first NCAA FBS scholarship offer at the age of 15. Like, Veyer absolutely has that pedigree. His collegiate career didn't go as he wanted it to, and that was on display for me. Do I think he's worthy of a pick? Maybe. But it wouldn't surprise me if he went unselected. And who knows, maybe if he gets with the right coaching staff, he could still be a long-tenured CFL player. But I was hoping, as I think a lot of scouts were, that he was going to take that next step and really light it up at Combine. That did not happen. As for Lats-Andres Regimbald, I mean, this guy's athleticism is truly off the charts. I mentioned that he had almost 100 rushing yards per game with the Redbirds over the last two seasons. And his testing, like, he is a true 6'3". He is 215 pounds and at 219 pounds, pardon me. And at that size, I mean, he verted 33.5, which is above average, even for receivers. Ran a 4.62, which is very good for a quarterback. And the broad, I think, is the most impressive. 10 feet, 11 inches. That is almost, I think that's within 8 inches of an all-time combine record. And that was within 4 inches of the incredible broad jump that Devin Cromwell did at the Michigan State Pro Day, which I think would have led all players at this year's NFL Combine. Like, the explosiveness that this guy has is unreal. And at that size, 6'4", 213, the three cone time was 7 seconds flat. Like, he's quick, he's shifty, he's got power, he's got speed, he's got explosiveness. And honestly, JC, I agree. Going into this combine, the consensus seemed to be he's going to be around 6'7", 8" guy. I would be comfortable, if I was a CFL team, honestly, taking him as high as early round 3. And the reason I say that is the worst case scenario, in my view, is he's Quincy Vaughn, who ended up being a really nice player for the Calgary Stampeders as a late second round pick last year. This year's class is deeper, so I think everybody moves down just a little bit. But Lats-Andres Regimbald, an impressive guy, an impressive athlete. I don't think you can go wrong. Like, worst case scenario is he's a really good short yardage quarterback in the Canadian Football League with the versatility to do some, dare I say, Chris Streveler-like things, right? We've seen the type of playmaking ability Streveler had, particularly in the early part of his career as a runner, as a receiver, as a thrower. To me, Lats-Andres Regimbald, he's not as fast as Chris Streveler, but he's a little bigger. And he's Canadian. So how do you go wrong with that? To me, he was a riser, and I think you were very smart to put him on your riser list.
And for the record, Brad Sinopoli, in the year that he was drafted, was a round 4 pick. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that Lats-Andres Regimbald, who ran faster than Sinopoli by a tenth of a second, can potentially go even higher. His ceiling is sky high.
Yes, and I do think that needs to be explicitly stated. Brad Sinopoli, obviously a very athletic guy, but Lats-Andres Regimbald is a better athlete. He is more athletic. The testing numbers objectively prove that. So, I'm not saying that he's going to be Brad Sinopoli. He's going to be a, you know, perennial all-CFL type slotback. I'm not saying that. But the ceiling here is really high, and that's exciting, I think, for fans in Quebec. Lats-Andres Regimbald is a bit of a collegiate star, but I think across this country, as fans get to see him play in the Canadian Football League in 2026 and years to come. Let's go to the running back, fullback, H-back, tight end group, JC. I think the obvious standout here was Emmerich Boutin out of Laval. He measured in at 6'3", 230 pounds, put up 22 reps on the bench, ran a 4.69. I don't think there's any doubt that he has cemented his status as a top 20, possibly even like late first round pick in this class. We talked about this a little bit last week. This is a position group where CFL teams have been thirsting for the last few years, looking for these types of bodies, the blockers, the special teamers, the guys who can make catches out of the backfield, get those occasional receptions, whether it's at tight end, H-back, whatever. This is a really strong group. Boutin stood out to me. Who else stood out for you?
Well, that 40-yard dash for Boutin is special for a tight end. And we've compared him to Patrick Lavoie in the past. I think he's a guy who can play a ton in the slot for you and catch a bunch of passes. I think he will have that ability at the CFL level. But when we were talking about La Tatresse Regimbeau, you talked about an elite short yardage guy. And there is an elite short yardage guy in this group. It's Jerome Rancourt from Western, who is a converted quarterback as well, might still go back to the Mustangs for his final season to play as their QB1, but measures in at 6'4", 260 pounds. And I don't know that I've ever seen a human being carry 260 pounds better than Jerome Rancourt. This guy looks like a stud. And there were times I watched these running back fullback drills, the blocking reps, pretty closely because they were the closest to our viewing area in the behind the mesh in the media space. And people could not move the bags when Jerome Rancourt was standing there holding them. They would hit them and stall out. He had to visibly let off and start backing up to allow these guys to have productive reps because he is so big and so physical. He's a guy to me that, you know, I can't truly assess his stock until he makes that decision about whether he's going to go back to school or not, but could have a ton of potential in the CFL. The other person I think who helped themselves maybe a little bit, Hodge, or cemented themselves at the top of what was a weaker running back group was Isaiah Smith. There are still flaws to his game, but he is a guy who has massive size, weighing at 230 pounds. And you look at some of the testing numbers, a 36.5-inch vert and a 4.67 40 at that size are no joke. And you see the flashes from him. If somebody can shape him, get him to be a little bit more physical, I think there's a lot of upside there.
I'll touch on the other three running backs who were there. Charles Eslin out of Ottawa, Wigbe Mambo, and Liam Talbot out of Windsor. These guys, I think, are all going to be victims a little bit of just how similar the three are. Like, testing-wise, the results are very similar across the board. Talbot stood out a little bit with the 24 bench reps. He did run the best 40 at 4.51, but his broad was the worst of the three. Like, they're very similar athletes, and all relatively even levels of production. Talbot a little bit lower just because he was more of a backup at Windsor, sharing the backfield with Mambo, but he's also the most prolific returner of the group. And at 4.51, he does have legit speed to return at the professional level. That 4.51 is laser from the Invitational Combine. But in a weaker running backs class, I think a number of CFL teams are going to go, oh, well, we got three guys who are all really similar. And if there's three of them and they're all similar, you know, we can kind of wait. You know, if one or two are off the board, we can wait as long as we need to get one of them. So I think they're all good players, but I also think they're going to be victims a little bit. I think their stock's going to drop a little bit just because the three of them are so similar. They're all essentially the same height. They're very similar in terms of weight. The one who stands out is Smith, JC, as you highlighted. He's a true 6'2", 230, a little stockier, maybe a little bit more team's value as a cover guy. But the true strength of this group, I think, as we mentioned off the top, is the fullback, H-back, tight end body type more so. Boutin was great. Rancourt, and I agree, JC. Looking at him, I guess he's 6'4", 230. He weighed 260 pounds, but moves like he's 230. To me, it's a rough comp, but I almost see him as the Canadian Tommy Stevens. Like, he could be that short yardage game wrecker. And Tommy Stevens, I think, is a little taller than Jerome, but I'm not sure he's heavier. He looks a little heavier because, again, Rancourt is so lean for how heavy he apparently is. But these are names that I think CFL fans are going to come to know for sure in the next few years.
And 4'8 at 260 pounds. I mean, if that was a defensive lineman, we'd be talking about how great that is, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
4'8. This is a guy who has legit speed at a massive size, that can be a real mismatch nightmare if you put him in at short yardage and you have him going around the edge or plunging forward or whatever you want to do with him. I think he can help you in multiple ways.
Yeah, Rancor, as JC highlighted, I don't believe has made up his mind yet if he's going to go back to Western for 2026 or if he's going to go pro. To me, if he was going pro right away, he could easily be a second round pick. If he is going back to Western, I think he'll be round four, give or take. But it speaks volumes that you're not available to CFL teams this year, and yet you're worth a fourth round pick, right? That and a deep draft nonetheless. So Jerome Rancor, definitely a guy worth getting excited about. Let's talk about the receivers, JC. Last week, we weren't really sure who the top guy in this class was. The consensus before his pro day was Nick Senekal out of Hawaii. He didn't run very well at his pro day. He came to Combine, changed his mind, wasn't originally going to come, decided to, and then actually ran worse at the Combine, 4.79, essentially the same speed as Jerome Rancor, only he weighs 61 pounds less at 6'1", 199. I still think Senekal's a good receiver. I don't think there's any question about that. But I do think that a new number one has emerged from this group. Who is it?
Yeah, I'm not ready to completely dismiss Senekal just because of his level of production. This was a guy that a year ago was the top receiver for Hawaii and has suffered some knee injuries since then, which decreases his speed. But the best player that showed up to Combine, who impressed people by even taking to the field, because most of these NCAA prospects opted out of the practice portion, was Nate DeMontagnac from North Dakota. I thought he was super smooth when he was out there on Saturday, made some nice catches, was tough to cover, just looked like the most polished option in terms of being a true receiver who can start for you at some point early in his career. He's going to be in that conversation with Senekal for the top overall receiver pick. I think he really elevated himself and answered some questions that people may have had about, you know, how much he's improved over the last couple of years, because this was really his only productive college season with the Fighting Hawks this past year. I think he answered all those questions and more and really, really helped himself at the Combine. The other guy who I think has a legitimate chance to be the top receiver off the board, Hodge, for reasons other than being able to catch passes, is Laiomi Ojotolayo from Laurier, who I already liked a lot coming into the Combine, but blew up the testing. I mean, he's built like a god, 6'2", 217, rippling muscles, finished in the top five of four of the six testing events, and goes out there, flashes in the one-on-ones. He's not the best pure receiver. I'm not sure he's a guy that ever starts for you in a truly threatening capacity, but physically dominates other players and has more special teams production than maybe any receiver I've ever seen come through the CFL Combine. 37 career special teams tackles at Laurier for Ojotolayo. I think he's going to be a second round pick. I could see him going higher than guys like Nick Senekal or even Nate DeMontagnac just because of that value that he brings to the table. He's a truly impressive individual.
Yeah, DeMontagnac, I thought, was easily the most polished looking as a route runner. I don't think that there's a ton of other separators from this group. There's some good ones, obviously. I still think Nick Senekal is a good receiver. Malik Mega is the fastest of the group, I believe. Carter Kettle, I think, helped himself at this combine. I'm not sure that Shamar McBean did. He ran in, I believe it was the mid 4.5s at the UBC Pro Day. I know you were there timing him yourself, JC. He did not run at this year's combine. The other testing was fine, but as a Canada West All-Star, one of the most productive guys in the class, I think the most productive receiver in the class, I was expecting a little bit more. Somebody who did jump out to me, JC, which was not anticipated, is regional, or I should say invitational combine invite, Matt Sibley, 5'10", 189, undersized, but the testing is solid. 4.59 in the 40-yard dash, 17 on the bench. When I was watching him run routes at his size with the Calgary helmet, I was reminded a little bit of Colton Hunchak, who's now coaching in the league. And Colton didn't play at Calgary. He played at York, but he's from Calgary originally and played most of his CFL career with the Stampeders. I went back and looked at the testing numbers, and it's actually kind of wild how similar they are. Hunchak, 5'11", 190. 5'11", 189. I say 5'11". He's 5'10 and a half. Call spade a spade. They're essentially the same. Hunchak ran a 4.69. Sibley 4.59. So a little quicker for Sibley. 28 and a half vert for Hunchak. 31 vert for Sibley. So a little bit more explosive in that area. Hunchak had a 7.19 three cone, whereas Sibley had a 6.88 three cone. So this is essentially Colton Hunchak, just a slightly better athlete. He was productive for the Dinos, 105 catches for 1,300 yards and 7 touchdowns in 28 games. Also a productive returner, almost 1,400 career return yards for the Dinos. I don't think that Matt Sibley is going to be the first receiver off the board. I don't think he's going to be one of the first five receivers taken off the board. But for someone who helped himself as a late-round guy, I think you have to put Sibley there. He was a standout from the Invitational, and I thought he flashed at the National, which is pretty remarkable for a guy who wasn't initially invited. And when you talk to scouts, that's something they talk about. We'll get into again, later in the show, the breakdown of how the combine operates and maybe ways it's going to be tweaked. But the thing you repeatedly hear from scouts is, you know, the first round picks, everybody already likes them. They've watched the film. They've seen the testing at the pro days. It's fine. The mid-round guys don't, you know, it's hard for a mid-round guy to kind of push up at the combine. More often they fall down. If you're a lower guy, the only way to go is up. And your goal is to not establish yourself as a late rounder undrafted guy, but to push up. And Sibley certainly did that, right? Those on-field drills can really help those late round guys. And I thought that he certainly helped himself. I was interested to see if Devon Blackwood out of St. FX could do that. 6'2", 201. He's somebody who could be the first AUS draft pick in a year. Last year, we didn't get an AUS draft pick. At this point, I think he's going to be in a CFL camp, but after running a 4.88 40-yard dash, I think it'll probably be as an undrafted player, probably not as a late-round pick.
And he had some drops as well throughout the weekend that I saw, which is troublesome. I think there will be an AUS receiver that gets drafted out of this group, and that's Joshua Jack, who I thought had a really good weekend as well. The other Invitational guy, Tyreek Quason from Windsor, I thought flashed at times, but Sibley was the one who was uncoverable at times. The only reason he's not on my risers list is I think by default the Invitational guys are already risers, right? They've booked their way there. They've elevated their stock, but Sibley certainly continued to impress. The two losers, as it were, or fallers out of this group, certainly Devon Blackwood and Shamar McBean. We talked about him a week ago being a guy who could potentially push into that upper echelon of receivers, be alongside Carter Kettle as somebody that teams could see as a potential future starter. And not only did he raise some red flags by not running again in front of scouts after what some people felt was a bit of a disappointing 40 at the UBC Pro Day, an official 4.5. Not everybody trusts that number either. There was question marks about it, and he opted not to answer any of those questions live. There was some perception that we heard consistently from scouts and staff throughout the week that, you know, he was sort of picking and choosing his moments in practice, that he didn't necessarily have the best attitude at times. And ultimately, this whole weekend is a job interview. I don't think Shamar McBean capitalized on that opportunity in the way that he could have.
Yeah, I think going into combine, there was a thought that he could push his way up into even maybe as high as the second round. Is that fair to say? Mm-hmm. I think Shamar McBean after the combine is probably going to be fifth round, would be my guess. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Yeah, fifth or sixth. I think that's where I see him now. It's going to take somebody who, you know, truly trusts that UBC tape, who fell in love with it, to stand on the table and say, hey, I believe in this guy. I don't think he, you know, performed as well as he could have at the combine. Maybe he made some mistakes, but he's going to be a much better player in camp for us than he showed. I think that's what it's going to take for Shamar McBean to get a real opportunity as a receiver in the CFL. And I'm sure there's somebody who's going to do it. I don't want to dismiss how good he was as a player, but when you come into combine like that, it's going to push you down some teams' draft boards.
Let's go to the O-line, JC, the best position in football. The O-linemen, admittedly, from where we were in the media spot, I found very difficult to watch. I don't have a lot of opinion on how these guys looked in the one-on-ones. I think you got a little bit of a better view of it, so feel free to hop in with your thoughts, JC. For me, I'm mostly going to go based off what I've heard, at least preliminarily, from scouts and people who are watching the one-on-ones. I'll maybe just start by highlighting that a lot of guys didn't participate here, right? There were a lot of guys who didn't participate in the practices. Gio Vaccaro out of Purdue, who we have predicted, or at least I'll speak for myself, the mock draft that I did, I've predicted to go first overall, and I'll spoil the top of mock 2.0. Vaccaro is going to stay in that top pick to the Ottawa Red Blacks in the second mock draft that I publish, which will likely come later this week, possibly early next week. He did not participate. Darius Bell did not participate out of East Carolina. Jonathan Dennis, yes, he says Dennis, not Denis, out of Louisiana Tech. He did not participate. So with Logan Taylor and Albert Reese IV, two highly rated O-linemen who are likely going to start their careers in the NFL, we didn't see the top five offensive linemen in this draft participating in really any combine events. The three that I mentioned off the top were there in Edmonton. We chatted with them all. We've got a full interview up on our website already with YouTube and stuff with Darius Bell. I also spoke on the record with Dennis and with Vaccaro. Look for that content as well. So it was a little bit of a diminished group. That said, this is a deep position, and we all know that offensive line is always a spot that CFL teams are looking to make hay in the draft. I think I already know who your number one standout was, JC. I'll let you reveal that. But beyond him, I'd like to know who other risers or standouts were for yourself.
There is no secret that the crown jewel of the participating class at this year's combine for offensive linemen was Nicholas Hennings out of Queens. I've been talking about this guy on the podcast now for a couple of months. I've been raving about him since CGS. Well, this is the reason why, folks, because he was going to be an absolute freak. And at almost 6'6", 298 pounds, he goes out there and he runs a 4.9 flat 40-yard dash. That is an absurd number. It has been at least a decade since 2016 that the last offensive lineman went under 5 seconds in the 40 at the CFL Combine. That was Jamal Campbell out of York, who eventually went in the second round, I believe, to the Toronto Argonauts and had a nice career there, started some games at tackle in the CFL, but he ran a 4.96. Henning was faster than that because of the CFL's database being somewhat incomplete online. I can't find when the last guy ran in that range, but it has been at least a decade since anyone was even close. He is an impressive athlete. And not only did he raise his stock in the CFL, where he's, I think, essentially cemented himself as a guaranteed first round pick. The only reason he might not be a guaranteed first round pick is NFL teams are calling already. They're calling people in the hanging camp. They are calling people around the CFL. Staffers at the event are getting, you know, text messages and phone calls asking, hey, who is this kid? Are his results legit? What should we know about him? Because those results are impressive enough to potentially land an NFL contract as a UDFA. And I think Henning is a guy who deserves it. Interviewed extremely well, has a ton of raw potential as a guy who just 2 years ago was an all-Canadian tight end. The sky's the limit for him. In terms of other players who maybe elevated themselves throughout the event, I thought it was a good week for Jez Janvier out of Southern Mississippi. He had a lot of question marks because he barely played last year. Stood on his pro day numbers, which you reported today, actually, Hodge. But in the one-on-one reps, there were some bad losses, of course, and that's something that you see on the Janvier tape. But when he won in dominant fashion. There were pancakes. There were complete wipeouts of opponents. I think somebody is going to see what Janvier was able to accomplish this week and say, all the traits are there for us to develop this guy into something. And once you get past that first tier of about five or so offensive linemen that I have penciled in as definite future starters, you're looking at a guy who has high upside. And I think Janvier is now firmly at the top of that next tier.
You care about helping others learn and grow, and now you can make an even greater difference. The Ohio State University's fully online master's in applied behavior analysis prepares you to help learners with disabilities thrive. You'll develop the skills to use evidence-based interventions that enhance learning outcomes and foster independence, all in a flexible format designed for working professionals. With growing demand for board-certified behavior analysts, this online program helps you prepare for what's next without pausing your life. If you're ready to expand your impact, Ohio State is ready to support your next step. Visit go.osu.edu/behavioranalysis.
I'll be honest, this summer is stacked. Between that one big international soccer tournament, America's 250th anniversary, and the Route 66 Centennial, people are going to be traveling. What a lot of folks don't realize is that taking a trip in an RV is a whole heck of a lot more enjoyable than TSA lines or stodgy hotels. And you don't even have to own an RV or drive one to take part. With Outdoorsy, you can rent an RV or camper almost anywhere in the country. You can drive it, tow it, or have it delivered and set up for you. And these aren't bare-bones setups. Many come with full kitchens, bathrooms, showers, and real beds. It's often more affordable than hotels, especially for families or groups. And everything includes insurance, 24/7 support, and roadside assistance. If you're thinking about a summer trip or just planning ahead for the rest of 2026, get 10% off when you book using promo code OUTDOORSY2026. Head to OUTDOORSY.com. That's OUTDOORSY.com, promo code OUTDOORSY2026.
I agree. And that was a thought that I had, is we have two guys going to the NFL. We've got, I think, including Henning, four guys who are pretty much guaranteed to go in the first round. I would be surprised to see any of the top four, that being Vaccaro, Bell, Dennis, and Henning, fall out of round one. But Jez Janvier, I think, is going to be the next guy off the list. He's a guy who played some D-line at Eastern Michigan. His best season with the Eagles there was 2024. He started, I think, officially five games, but he played over 500 snaps at right guard. So essentially a full year starter at right guard there. Looked solid. True 6'5", 313. His body looks great. His testing numbers are solid. And there's going to be a team in the CFL who goes, okay, we can fix him, right? Like those bad reps, we can eliminate those. We can maximize the good reps. And if you're looking for guys who were at the combine who could potentially play tackle in the CFL, I think Nicholas Henning is one. I think Jez Janvier is two. And I think that's the end of the list. I think everybody else is an interior guy, which, I mean, hey, every team needs three interior guys, but tackles are always at a premium. For me, unfortunately, the faller here was Jack Warrick. I did not think that his testing numbers were remotely impressive. And I saw Warrick in person this past year. I thought he looked solid at tackle for the Saskatchewan Huskies. He's a guy who is always going to have to move inside at the CFL level. But only 12 reps on the bench, to me, is a red flag. You want to see offensive linemen doing at least 20. And the big red flag for me is that he had 14 at East-West last year, only 12 this year. I don't know how you're going backwards in your draft year. And if there is an injury here, I don't know about it. I believe Warwick was healthy all season. Again, if there's an injury I'm missing, my apologies, but I don't have anything in my notes suggesting that he was hurt. So I don't know why that number's not higher. 5.71, he had the slowest 40-yard dash of any offensive lineman, and he was the only one who didn't vert at least Riley Sheffer, okay, 21, but he was one of two offensive linemen who didn't vert at least 2 feet. So I think Warwick was a guy who, with a good combine, maybe ends up being that next guy after Jez Janvier. Like, he could have been a fourth rounder. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think he's going to be a late round pick, possibly even undrafted. But it is a great group, JC. And for the record, just to put Henning's number into perspective, you mentioned the 4.9 40-yard dash. At this year's NFL Combine, if my count is correct, 38 players, offensive linemen, ran the 40-yard dash. None of them faster than 4.9. There was one player who ran 4.9 flat. That was Logan Jones, center out of Iowa. Every other player was slower. So this is a guy who, if he'd been at the NFL Combine and had run that same number, would have been the top performer. And it's not like Henning is undersized, right? He's ready to go for the professional game, weighed in at 298 pounds, and he measured in just a hair under 6'6". So, like, he's got NFL size. He's got NFL strength, 27 reps on the bench. Unbelievable performance from him. I think this is it's a good group. And while we're here, JC, let's maybe talk about some of the later round guys, because as mm-hmm. we know, every CFL team is going to draft, barring a surprise, at least one O-lineman. And so let's touch on a few more. I think you like Braden Zeman out of Calgary and Michael mm-hmm. Scheschinger out of Guelph. Why were these two of your guys who maybe a little bit undersized, but stood out to you for positive reasons?
Yeah, I think both of those guys are really good athletes. You look at Zeman's testing numbers, the 8.9 broad that shows a bunch of explosiveness, 5.15 in the 40. That's a number that you like to see. That, you know, short shuttle is very nice as well at 4.78. Just a very athletic guy across the board. Probably a center-only prospect based on his size and length. But, you know, teams need good centers too. We tend to knock those center guys down the board, but there's some really good ones this year. Scheschinger is a similar situation for me. Super athletic and a college wrestler, and a good one at that, at Guelph. I think you saw that at times when he was getting pushed around by some of the bigger defensive tackles, that he was able to find his leverage, sink, and anchor and recover. Those are the traits that you like to see with that group. Frank Vrugdenhill of McMaster, I didn't get to see as many of his reps as I wanted to just because of the angle, but as somebody I've quietly liked for a long time as well, also potentially a center, but he's a bit bigger, 321 pounds, could probably play guard as well. You look at his numbers, 5.24 at 321 pounds, that's very impressive, but a 9-foot broad jump, that puts him as, I believe, the only other offensive lineman besides Henning that got above 9 feet. And he did that at, you know, 23 pounds heavier than what Henning was moving. That's impressive to me. He has not been playing football for very long either. Started after he got to U of T as a shot putter, where he walked on to the football team and didn't actually see the field until he was with the Hamilton Hurricanes in the CJFL. So those are three guys that, you know, maybe are more limited in terms of their size and length, probably aren't going to get driven into the top rounds because they don't have the potential to play tackle or don't necessarily have the build that you look for, but I think can be very good CFL players and potentially make a roster and eventually start down the line at center if they continue their development, put on some weight, and shape up their technique.
It was interesting on the first day of practices, Saturday, there was a ton of people there. I had a hard time seeing much. The Sunday, there were a lot fewer people. It was a lot easier to see. The problem mm-hmm. was so many D linemen didn't participate with bumps and bruises or nicks that it was actually quite hard to assess the O-line. At one point, Franklin Abello, the big O/D lineman out of Calgary, who we talked about a little bit last week, JC, moved to defensive line, which was funny. He was wearing an O-line jersey and he was going against O-linemen. He weighed in at 340 pounds at 6'6", which I think kind of popped some eyeballs like, whoa, that's a little heavy to come into combine. But he actually tested well for his size. I don't think he did brilliantly in the one-on-ones, but he was a guy who was always going to be a project. And I think based on his measurables, JC, he's a worthwhile project. I think Abello could be a late round pick as an O lineman. He should at very least be in a training camp given his raw ability and his raw frame, right? You can't teach athleticism at 6'6", 340. But let's, while we transition into the D line, we got Abello on the board. Who stood out to you most, JC, among the defensive linemen, the other side of the trenches?
The player that I was most impressed with this weekend was Tristan Marois from the University of Colorado. One of the players with the biggest school logo on his helmet at the event, although admittedly you can't see those anymore because you're wearing Guardian caps. I thought the Saskatchewan Husky players were super smart by bringing their own Guardian caps so you could see the logos. It used to be that you could watch a guy flash and you go, who is that? Oh, I recognize the helmet. That's not the case anymore. You got to look up the number. But the Colorado Buffalo defensive lineman Tristan Marois entered as a mystery, right? This is a guy who in 2 years in Boulder had basically never played defense, was great on special teams, was 6'5", 249. You like those two boxes checked, but you didn't know what he offered on defense because he hadn't done it since his time at Robert Morris. And he came out and he showed that he could rush the passer off the edge and he could probably do more for you defensively than you thought he could from watching the Colorado tape. I think that's going to help him immensely. He's going to be a size mismatch on special teams. And I think that that gives him the chance to sort of move up into that mid-tier of draft picks below those guys who weren't in attendance because they have opportunities south of the border, but somebody who can make an impact for you immediately. Other players that I thought helped themselves a little bit, Nathan Karabatsakis from Robert Morris, didn't test particularly well, sort of pedestrian across the board, but I thought flashed some motor at times. Ebenezer Dabula had a very impressive 40-yard dash, 4.9 at 278 pounds, and I thought on Saturday, he showed a lot of power and ability and length, knocking guys back. A lot of the centers had challenges dealing with him. He's not polished enough right now to get off those blocks and finish the rep, but I think there is a raw lump of clay there with some athletic potential that you could develop in. And what is admittedly a very weak defensive tackle group, just because some of those guys are not going to be available right away. Dabula probably goes higher than he would in other years.
Very good point, JC. And I would be remiss if we didn't mention Ital Frangione out of Georgetown. He did not participate after suffering a grade 2 hamstring tear.
Best personality of the combine.
Yeah, somewhat recently. Well, I don't necessarily want to say that because we didn't talk to literally all, I think it was 83 players in attendance, so I don't want to crown a best. But of the individuals we spoke to, Natal has the biggest personality and one of the best senses of humor. He was great to chat with, and he's somebody who, I mean, he's going to have a tough time making a team in 2026. He's an interior D lineman. He measured in at 5'10", 267 with short arms. That said, Frangione is very much aware of his size limitations, and he's somebody who I genuinely think a CFL team should take a flyer on, if for nothing else than what he's going to bring to your locker room as somebody who's going to make everybody bust up. He's also, by the way, a productive player from Georgetown. I don't want to paint a picture like he's not a productive player. He was a starter with the UBC Thunderbirds before transferring down to D1. He was a highly productive All-Patriot player, as JC laid out last week. But now that we got the personality part of the picture, you can't help but root for the kid. So I'm looking for that. But I thought the D lineman that stood up most to me was Charlie Parks out of the University of Saskatchewan. Yeah. Canada West All-Star, 6'4", 232 pounds. The testing is not off the charts, but it is impressive. 9.9 broad jump, I think, shows some nice explosiveness. The quickness testing is solid. And I was watching a lot of the one-on-ones that I did catch with a veteran active CFL defensive lineman. And I asked him, hey, you're watching these defensive ends, because as mentioned last week, the D ends are a lot deeper in this class than the D tackles. The edge guys, a lot more of them than the inside guys. And I said, what do you think of the edges? And he said, stiff. First word out of his mouth, stiff. These guys are stiff. And I would agree with that sentiment. There's a lot of guys in that 6'2", 6'3", range who are 250, 260. And I'm not sure how many of them are going to rush the passer at the CFL level. If any of them are, I think Charlie Parks probably has the best chance. He was ducking under a lot of those defense or offensive tackles. They had trouble with his quickness off the edge. I really liked it. I think he's still like a lot of these guys, like the Marois that you mentioned, like guys like Nathan Karabatsakis out of Robert Morris, who you mentioned, Brody Burke out of Carleton, Carter Hooper out of South Dakota. These guys are all going to have to cut their teeth on special teams. But Charlie Parks, to me, if there's one guy who right now you had to pin me down and say, okay, but who of these guys could be a rotational, possibly impact edge rusher in the CFL? To me, among the combine guys, I would pick Charlie Parks.
I'm a big fan of Charlie Parks's game. And to me, the question with him about whether he can be a rotational player is just size-wise. Like, he's not that big, 230 pounds. He looks a little thin. When you talk to him, I had a wonderful conversation with Charlie at Combine. He just doesn't look like your typical defensive lineman. He's fairly skinny, but great twitch, an amazing pass rush arsenal. A really good player. He's going to get drafted highly because I believe he can play special teams, and I think he can be somebody who develops into that defensive role. I was hoping that the player that became that for me over the course of the combine would be Carter Hooper, because you look at the size, almost 6'6", 257 pounds, the pedigree, like South Dakota is an FCS powerhouse. He actually saw defensive reps at UConn, which is an FBS program. That's a good resume and great size, but pedestrian testing numbers, not dissimilar to Karabatsakis, but I don't think he showed really any twitch. I thought he was stiff. I thought he was upright. He's always been more of a run defending guy, not much value as a pass rusher. But I think he really struggled against some of the offensive linemen that frankly, you know, won't be playing tackle at the CFL level and shouldn't be playing tackle. He didn't eat them up as a bigger school guy. That was concerning for me. Had a better Sunday than he did Saturday. I'll give him credit for that. You like to see guys get better and, you know, address some of their flaws. But I was a little bit disappointed in what Carter Hooper brought to the table. And he's probably the biggest D-line faller for me.
Push back a little bit on Parks. I don't think he's skinny. I don't think he's light. Kwaku Boateng was an excellent CFL pass rusher at 6'1", 233. Those are his official combine measurements. Charlie Parks, 6'4", 232. And now that I'm comparing the testing, they did identical numbers on the bench. Their 40s were only 300ths of a second off. And Parks actually had a better broad and a significantly better three cone. So I'm not saying that Charlie Parks is Kwaku Boateng, but I think there's some similarities, right? The question for Boateng coming out of the draft was like, okay, productive collegiate pass rusher, can it translate? The answer was, heck yes, it can. I think Kwaku Boateng would still be playing had his career not been derailed by injuries. I'm not saying Charlie Parks is Kwaku Boateng, but I think there could be a similar path there. And also, famous alto saxophone player Charlie Parker, Saskatchewan. I got to shout out my guy Rob Vanstone, the biggest jazz fan on the prairies. If Charlie Parks, aka Charlie Parker, gets drafted by the Riders, Rob Vanstone, he's going to be a happy man. I guarantee he's going to have at least one jazz pun in his column. Shout out Vanstone. Let's go to the linebackers, JC. And like the D-line class, the top few guys in the class weren't at Combine. In this case, Dariel Jabome wasn't there from Rutgers. Darius McKenzie, well, I should say McKenzie was physically at the Combine. He has not been able to do any testing after suffering what I believe was an ankle injury this past season at South Alabama. He's anticipated to be ready for the start of training camp, but is not yet ready to do any testing. So not including those two guys, this was still considered a strong position group. And JC, by the sounds of your conversation with me post-draft, or post-combine, I should say, it seems like you're still high on this linebacker group.
I love the linebackers coming in, and I think I've fallen in love with a couple more of them coming out of the combine. The biggest riser of the entire group for me is Eric Roscoe, and that's not just linebackers, that's every single position, because he was such an enigma coming in, especially to us in the media who maybe weren't following him before he got his Canadian citizenship and was entered into the draft class. We didn't know what to make of him. A slightly undersized linebacker, played at a Division II school. Yes, he was three times all conference, but you know, what do you make of that assessment? What do you make of his tape in the indoor football league last season? And then Roscoe comes out here. He runs a 4.56 40-yard dash, which is blazing fast for a linebacker. He is explosive in the other testing. I thought he was noticeably twitchier than any other prospect in this linebacker group when they were going through the drills. He nailed the interviews by all accounts. I've had people tell me, multiple teams tell me, that the two best interviews they had at the combine were Darius McKenzie and Eric Roscoe. He is a super mature individual when you speak to him. And he adapted effortlessly to a version of football that he has never played before in his life. This was his first time on a CFL field, and I thought he was very impressive. He's somebody that was maybe linebacker 5 coming in tentatively, like until those questions were answered. To me, he is 2 or 3 now. He's right up there with Darius McKenzie. I still think I would put McKenzie ahead of him, but very much cemented into a tier of players that could be starters in the Canadian Football League.
I agree that Roscoe was the standout at this position for me. He is somebody who turns 26 in October. I don't think that's going to necessarily hurt his draft stock, but I do think that's notable. He's one of the oldest players in the draft. That said, some teams might see that as a plus, right? He's played indoor football professionally. Maybe they see it as, oh, this is a guy who's like pro ready. Boom. He's on a roster. He knows what to do. He's not going to make rookie mistakes, and he's not going to have to maybe learn the same life skills that some of our 21-year-olds have yet to develop. Other teams might say, ah, he's a little old for our taste. And there are a lot of other linebackers in this class. Two guys who I don't think tested quite as well as I was at least hoping to see were Justin Pace and Osasari Odemwingie out of Queens and Calgary, respectively. I don't think either tested terribly, but Pace was a guy who I'd mocked at 15th overall. I think after he ran a 4.84 at 6 foot, 218 pounds, he's probably more of a round 3 guy. The tape is still really good. He still has a ton of accolades. He's still one of the most physical players in this year's draft, but I don't think he's a top 15 pick anymore. Odemwingie, same thing. He ran a 4.96, which that number is a bit of a concern. Yes, there have been linebackers who have been drafted running as slow as the low fives in the 40-yard dash, but Odemwingie on film looks way faster than 4.96. I was anticipating like a 4.75, being off by 0.2 seconds. Little bit of a red flag. But JC, who else out of this group stood out for you? I believe Jackson Brashear out of Ottawa is one of your fallers. Why is that?
Well, the problem with Brashear is this is a guy who was playing cornerback not too long ago. He's added a bunch of weight, and I don't think his athleticism has benefited from it necessarily, right? You were hoping that his testing numbers would improve from what he did at East West Bowl just because he's become more comfortable over time at that weight. But overall, they're very disappointing, similar to Odemwingie. A 4.97 in the 40, those are tough numbers to justify drafting. Now, I do think both Jackson and Asasore will ultimately hear their names called. The tape is too good not to pick them, but they certainly saw their stock fall in the eyes of teams throughout this weekend. A couple of guys that I think elevated themselves, Mark Dejanay-Rondo, the teammate of Jackson Brassier, admittedly one of the players that I knew maybe the least about coming into the combine. You know, I focused a little bit more on Brashear. I hadn't had a ton of conversations with teams about Rondo. I knew he was a good player. I liked some of the film. I was learning more, and I was excited to see what he could bring to the table. But, you know, to my fault, I maybe dismissed him a little bit for being too undersized. And he comes out and he has the biggest broad jump of any player at the combine, almost 11 feet, and really looks impressive out there moving around. And then you start talking to scouts and the truth comes out. They're like, yeah, actually, I've always liked Rondo better than Brashear. And this guy has been one of my favorites for a long time. And you realize that maybe they were holding a little bit back on somebody like Rondo, hoping that he would fall to them. I think the secret's out. I think everybody likes Rondo now and they can be open about it. I still don't know where he's going to fall just because of those size concerns, but an impressive combine from him. Another guy who stood out to me, Luc Gagné from Concordia. Sort of a classic example of a guy who wasn't a full-time starter for his college team, which we often see in the CFL draft, but was a dominant special teamer and has some really great measurables for that. The 4.57 40-yard dash, the 10-1 and a half broad. Like, this is a guy who's going to get down the field quickly on kickoff and make plays for you. I think that he is somebody who, you know, elevated himself over the weekend, wasn't able to participate on Sunday, unfortunately, because of a minor injury, but will be certainly drafted at some point and may go higher than you expect, similar to a Gabriel Lessard last year, who was, you know, in the same mold, an RSCQ linebacker who wasn't a full-time starter, but was great on special teams. Gagné is that guy this year.
Another good tester in this group, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention, is Brody Clark out of York. Mm-hmm. Almost 6 foot and a half, almost 6'1", 217 pounds, ran a 4.73, brought a 10.6. That 10.6 is almost top of the whole linebacker class, and that includes the future NFL guys. Rondo was the only one who brought it better, but of course he did it at 194 pounds, doing that at 217 pounds, a lot more impressive. So I think that's one of the players to look at is Clark out of York.
I only have a bias against Clark because he almost delayed my playing on the way to combine.
Hey, he got there
in time.
Reason.
He got there in time, everybody.
He
Don't
got there
worry,
on time. You can't be hating on a guy for being on time. It's not like he missed a flight. Who would miss a flight?
In typical York fashion, he came in last.
Oh, they're not coming in last anymore. They won
That's
two games
true.
The last
that,
2 years. Goodbye.
That joke's a little outdated. I'll admit it, but I had to make it.
Yeah, that joke would have killed in 2022 in the OUA. Not anymore. They are comfortably third from the bottom.
Third last.
And I think Dexter Jackie's going to have that team in the playoffs before long. I really do. Let's go to the DBs, JC. And there were a number of guys, again, who didn't compete necessarily. Trey Tomlinson did not test. Ranked defensive back out of Louisiana. We didn't see Jet Elad, who tested partly at Rutgers Pro Day, didn't fully participate didn't test at all. Measured at the Rutgers Pro Day, did not test. Malcolm Bell did not come to Combine. He did the Michigan State Pro Day. Devin Cromwell partially participated in the Michigan State Pro Day. He's going to need knee surgery. You have a great article on that. I'd encourage everybody to check out. He did come to the Combine, though, and interviewed very well. That interview with us, one of them, is up on our YouTube page. That said, even taking all those guys out of account, I thought there were some really impressive defensive backs. This is not a group that we had as one of the very, very strongest in this year's draft, JC, but there were a lot of guys who I thought tested well, stood out positively. Who are some of your top DBs coming out of the combine?
Well, I'll start off the top with the player that you so cruelly tried to cut me off from talking about during our preview podcast, and that was Ethan Stewart of McMaster. I had to fight to get that guy's name in before we ended the pod last week. And Stuart came out and impressed. Normally, the three-cone drill, the short shuggle drill, these are the domains of the tiny, the undersized, the quick little guy. Those players who often don't get drafted, don't have great CFL careers because they don't have those CFL measurables. But Ethan Stuart won both of those events, and he's 6'2", 223. This guy is a beast. He moves like a safety with a linebacker's body. I think he is rising up draft boards. I would not be shocked to see him go in round three because of the value he's going to bring on special teams and the defensive versatility. To me, he is one of the standout defensive backs. Other guys that I thought helped themselves a little bit, Cyrus McGarrell, his testing numbers for a guy who didn't play a ton at Northern Illinois are really solid. I thought he showed some flashes. I thought there were some flashes from Pierre Kamenyi as well, who's just got ridiculous length out of Ohio, basically never played defense in his NCAA career, but was a really good special teamer. And you look at his size, 6'1½", 214 pounds, 34-inch arms. That's somebody who's going to go higher in the draft than maybe you'd expect based on his resume, just because he is going to bring so much value and the ability to play special teams, the ability to step in as an emergency cornerback. I liked some of the reps from Kamenyi. He was a little bit, let's say, combative in some of the drills, calling people out, battling for extra reps. Not everybody will like that, but I think you can make the argument that there was a competitive fire that he was showing at the time that maybe you want to see in a CFL training camp.
I had the same thought. I think Kamenyi battling and staying in for extra reps at the expense of others who are also looking for reps. On the one hand, some teams could go, man, this guy's making it all about himself. That's a turnoff. Some teams are going, boom, that's the competitiveness we're looking for. We love the fire. So could go either way, I think, depending on which scout, which team, which personnel, all that good stuff. But I will fully give it to Ethan Stuart. I heard some really wonderful feedback from some of the coaches who were in attendance about his play, and the testing numbers speak for themselves. This is a guy who I had projected initially as a special teams body. I think now he is projecting as a starting safety in the Canadian Football League, maybe not in 2026. It's rare for guys to come out and start right away, even as NCAA guys, but I think he's the future is really, really bright for him. I think one guy who he didn't compete at Combine, but he did attend an interview, who's probably falling, is Trey Tomlinson after running 4.66 at his pro day. His official measurement, he is a shorter player. It came in 5'8 1/8". At 5'8", you've got to have blazing speed in order to play at this level. I still think he's a really talented guy. He's got great hops. He's got great production from his collegiate career. From Richmond, where he was an absolute stud, finishing his collegiate career at Louisiana. But he's somebody who I think between the height and the speed is going to make him fall. I still think he gets drafted, but like for context, this is a guy who was on the initial scouting bureau top 20. He fell off in winter, and I think he's going to fall some more. Out of the rest of this group, I think you got to look at Ben Sangmua out of UBC as a tester. He didn't run the 40, which he initially ran at that same UBC pro day that you attended, JC. But 10-10 in the broad jump is pretty sensational. That led all defensive backs at the combine. And I think that as a guy who came to football later, he showed some good stuff in the one-on-ones. And I know teams want to see more physicality from him, but I thought he brought some of that. I liked the couple of reps from him that I saw, though again, I'm not going to pretend that I saw a perfect angle of every single rep because we just didn't have the ability to see every rep super clearly. Before we sign off from the player evaluations, JC, are there any defensive backs we didn't hit that you'd like to hit?
I think the only guy that's worthy of a mention just because of what he ran was Louis-Philippe Gauthier from Montreal, who won the 40-yard dash at 4.5. flat. This is a fast cover corner. That should help his stock a little bit, but I don't know that he answered all the questions that teams had about him this week in terms of whether he's physical enough to make it at the next level. Wonderful guy, had a great conversation with him, an interview, which there will be an article on at some point before the draft, but you've got to be physical to play defensive back in the CFL. And even though he's 6 foot, 200 pounds, he doesn't really look it. He looks small and he doesn't engage in the way that you would like. Great coverage player, but where is he going to fall in a draft that values special teams ability, physicality, versatility when he doesn't necessarily possess all of those things?
Getting to the actual combine itself, again, the schedule roughly is players arrive. I actually believe they arrive Wednesday before the media speaks to them. We get to talk to them on Thursday for the first time, and they also all measure in with CFL teams on Thursday.
Medical testing as well.
The what?
Medical testing as well.
Oh, yes, medical testing. And for the record, media are not, for reasons I understand, media are not welcome to attend medical or measurements. The media begins watching them on Friday during their testing. They did all the on-field stuff in the morning, the bench in the afternoon. There have been years where the testing has dragged on forever, and watching testing can be a little bit like watching paint drying. This year, it was like chop, 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 bang, 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 super fast, super efficient, which was great. They also start interviewing with teams on Friday. The interviews continue into Saturday. They also have two practices. And then Sunday, they have a morning practice, and then everybody flies home. It was kind of funny going from Combine to the airport on Sunday because it was just the same 200 people in both locations. There are a few extra people at the airport, but not that many people at the airport in Edmonton on a random Sunday in March. It was like mostly CFL prospects and scouts and coaches, which was really fun. But the vibe, the word on the street is, you know, this event has undergone format changes over the years. And I think the league is really smart for listening to feedback and saying, okay, what can we do to make this event better? How can we better serve teams? Because of course, this event is all about giving teams an opportunity to evaluate players and also helping players showcase themselves at their very best. And the feedback seems to be that maybe instead of a 4-day event, maybe this can be a 3-day. And what I mean by that is maybe Thursday is just the test, or Friday is the testing, Saturday is all interviews, and then Sunday is all practices. Maybe there's a Thursday in there somewhere, but in other words, instead of having 2 days of practices, maybe 1 day is better, because the Sunday practices, there were a ton of guys sitting out. And I've been at past combines where the last day is a ghost town because everyone's getting sick, right? Once everybody's been in the hotel and spending time together in the locker room, blah, 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 right? There's a cold or a flu that goes around, and guys, obviously, it's a job interview. They don't want to compete if they're sick and not at their best. And the same is true if they have nicked something. And it's very normal for guys to get nicked up at combine because they oftentimes, right, they've spent the last months and months focused on athletic training, and now they're getting back onto the football field for the first time in some cases in 4 months, right? They haven't played a game since November, and some cases even earlier than that. So I think that a format change could be really interesting. I think 1 day of on-field is probably enough, especially if only having 1 day maybe means getting a higher percentage of players onto the field and into those drills. But I know, JC, one of your fallers is going to be some of the divisive opt-outs who didn't participate in the combine. Tell us about that and how maybe in future years this could be a trend.
Well, I think what you're addressing, those changes, is something that could help with this situation. But when you talk to teams, one of the things they'll tell you is the players that hurt themselves the most are those guys who didn't necessarily have the highest draft stock to begin with and opted out of drills instead, either because they had already competed at a pro day and they wanted to stand out those numbers and they didn't feel the need to suit up in the padded portion, or because they, you know, participated in some of the padded drills, but they suffered a minor injury and they didn't want to push through. The wording that one CFL scout told to me is, hey, if you can't battle through it here, how are you going to battle through it in training camp? Because that's going to be a hell of a lot tougher. Now, I want to make clear, I don't think that assessment is entirely fair from teams to a certain extent, because these guys are receiving no guarantees at this stage, right? They have to protect their prospects to be professional athletes and their earning potential. There is not a single team out there that is going to go, hey, I'm guaranteeing you as a draft pick. And not only that, if you tear your ACL tomorrow, I'm going to pay your whole contract next year. Don't worry about it. I've got you covered, bud. Teams aren't going to do that. And because of that, these players have to protect themselves. But there is a happy medium here. And I think going to one day of padded practices will reduce the risk on these players. It's going to lead to a more productive second day and maybe encourage more guys to suit up and take advantage of drills. Now, I don't think you're ever going to see the same number or caliber of guys on the field as we once did, because the perception has changed in college football. These guys are more polished as businessmen, shall we say, because so many of them from the NCAA have earned money. There are opt-outs at the NFL Combine. There are opt-outs of things at pro days. Guys know that if something's going to hurt them or potentially put them at risk, maybe they don't need to do it. But there was at least a handful of players who did not participate in things at the CFL Combine who, you know, weren't full-time starters at their school or weren't particularly productive. And I think as a result, teams are going to be less likely to take them because they did not change any of that perception about them by standing around on the sideline.
Agreed. And all in all, I thought, again, it was a great event. It was a ton of fun to cover. It's a great opportunity to have some fun, enjoy some football in the spring. And I know I'm already looking forward to next year's Combine. No, we do not know where it will be. Personally, I will say, and maybe this is selfish, I like Regina and Winnipeg. Yes, they're, one is my home and the other is the closest CFL stadium to my home. But I love that we just have such a great view,
yes,
as members of the media, being able to, at those various complexes, go up to the second level and watch the field, right? Seeing those drills from an aerial view is so much better than a sideline view, especially when you're behind the mesh and then you've got just a gob of players standing in front and in some cases blocking that view. I understand why they're blocking the view. They want to watch too, but it's tough when you're trying to assess players and see who's standing out, and you can't be on the field and you're kind of stuck behind a glut of humanity, but I also get it. So we'll see. The Combine has, in my time of covering it, gone to Edmonton a couple times now, Winnipeg a couple times, Regina a couple times. I've covered it, two Toronto Combines. So I'm curious. I know there's always conversation about, like, man, could we go to another CFL city? Or Laval has great infrastructure there in Quebec City. Could we go there? Could we go to Saskatoon, where the Huskies have some great infrastructure, the University of Saskatchewan? I would be down for all of that. I would imagine there are some travel logistical concerns about getting hundreds of people to Quebec City or Saskatoon. Not a lot of direct flights, especially when you're flying people in from all across North America. But hey, again, great event. Hats off to everyone who helped make it happen. It was a real pleasure to cover, and I'm looking forward to the CFL draft scheduled for April 28th, 2026. JC, your final thoughts.
It's going to be my Christmas. Make sure you're tuning into our live show. Make sure you're tuning into our live blog as well. We will have all the coverage. We'll have more player profiles. We'll have our position rankings officially coming up here in, you know, a couple of weeks. Everything you need to know about the draft, you will find it on 3 Down Nation in a depth that you will not find anywhere else. So stick with us until it's all said and done.
Thank you to the handful of podcast listeners who came up and said hi in Edmonton. Always nice to connect with the people on the other side of this show who are watching, listening. And also a huge shout out to all the people in the Canadian Football League who thanked us for our coverage. That was the most common conversation starter, at least I had, whether it's with GMs, scouts, coaches, personnel people, whatever, people coming up and saying, hey, you guys do a great job. Or, oh, hey, you guys do so much to cover our league, especially in the off season. We really appreciate you guys keeping us in the news cycle. Well, we appreciate you. So thank you very much, everybody, for their kind words. We at Three Down Nation, three downs, no days off. Let's go. 2026 CFL draft. And I do think it's really like Christmas, JC. Once the draft is gone and it's done, we're basically right into rookie training camps. And then, like, you'll blank and it'll be Labor Day. You'll blank again. It'll be the Grey Cup in Calgary. So it's going to be awesome. We're about to hit the road here. And we hope you all enjoy the ride.